Okay, good afternoon here, and welcome to this class on the teacher quandary. And I'm glad to see you sitting up front here because I want to have a fair amount of discussion. I understand that I'm asked to give my perspective as a teacher on why teachers stop teaching after 2 years or 3 years. And so that word quandary in there, that's what we're addressing, which means a question, essentially. I understand, too, that I'm looking at it from a teacher's perspective, and that is one side of the question, and also that all of us have personal experiences that shape our opinions and things like that. So all the disclaimers. I'm done with all disclaimers now. I have a scenario here to just kind of get us thinking about why teachers quit. Why good teachers quit, sometimes not so good. So Miss Angela wants to teach school. She graduated from 10th grade. She enjoyed school, and she liked all of her teachers, except for one teacher she had in the upper grades who had capricious rules like forbidding the students to cross between the rows of desks and making them ask permission to use the restroom during school. When she turned 19, she was asked to teach. She was asked to teach grades 3 and 4 at a school in another state. She is thrilled at the opportunity and immediately begins thinking about how she will decorate her room, even before she agrees to teach. She orders posters and banners and beanbags and organic scented candles for her classroom. She asks for pictures of her students and plans her seating chart. She also plans to keep order by showing her students how much she cares about them. School begins with a half day, the day after Labor Day, as it does, and Miss Angela is excited and nervous, and she's ready. Her students enter a little shyly, not sure what they will think of this new teacher from out of state. And the bell rings, and the children are hers for the first day. Miss Angela quickly learns that little of what she remembers from going to school is the same as teaching school. For one thing, it seems there's very little time to sit quietly at her desk. She does look forward to recess, but mostly because then she gets a break from talking all the time. And art class, those wonderful art classes, who knew those fun art classes, getting those fun art classes ready was so much work. And those annoying rules that her former teacher had, she ruefully agrees that they do actually help to keep order. Miss Angela finds herself exhausted nearly every day when the bell rings for dismissal. But Miss Angela throws herself into her teaching. She learns through trial and error how much she can push her slower students. She learns how to speak clearly when she reads through the directions in class. She is learning how to expect what questions they will ask in math. At Christmas time, she agrees to teach another year. Fast forward 1.5 years, and Miss Angela is ready to teach her third year. She is much more confident as a teacher and knows that she will get along much better with all of her students now. But this year, there is a new wrinkle. The school board has hired a new upper grade teacher, a young man by the name of Henry Martin. He has not taught before, but he is cheerful. He is a cheerful and likable person. He gets along well with the children. Henry puts himself through, or he goes through much of the same initial challenges that Angela did. And like her, he also puts himself into his work. And school goes very well that year. Miss Martin and Miss Angela seem to spend a lot of time chatting after school. When Christmas comes around, Mr. Henry Martin asks Miss Angela before the school board does, and she decides not to teach the next year. Mr. Martin does agree to teach the next year, and he teaches in courts through the next school year and proposes in the fall, and they are engaged to be married. They are engaged to be married in June. Next September, Mr. Martin is back for his third year. He is really getting into teaching. He is reading more teaching books all the time. And he has learned not to be intimidated by teenagers who are having a bad day. Mr. Martin receives a raise in salary because he is now married. He is amazed, though, at all the things they have to buy to start a home together. He finds he uses all his paycheck every month, and there's almost nothing left to put towards buying a home someday. It is also discouraging to him to see his peers making 3 and 4 times his salary and building new houses and buying new vehicles. He's also busy in the evenings, and there is not as much time to get ready for the next day's lesson. It also seems as if the parents are more critical of his work, and it especially hurts Angela when she hears other mothers speaking in low voices about the teacher, her new husband. Angela is also not used to pinching pennies, and she struggles to make ends meet and to pay the household bills. When Christmas time comes around, Henry tells the school board that perhaps they should look for another teacher for the next school year. So this scenario is actually drawn from lots of different scenarios. It is not me, right? It's just different things that I've thought of. So why do teachers teach 2 or 3 years and say they need a break? And I have some points here that I think are some of the big points. And then I am so glad to have all these experienced teachers here. And we are expecting to hear from them as well. I warned at least one of them that I'd like to hear from you. And also if you have questions or redirect or just a serious conflict with anything I say, you can jump up and scream, or well, however you prefer to interact with me, that's fine. But don't throw things, please. Number one, these are not in matters of importance or anything like that. It's just the way I have them listed. One main reason that people stop teaching is they get married. And that is not anything we can do anything about. That's a good thing, to get married. I think it was a wonderful thing. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I think as I was thinking about all the teachers that I've taught with, and of all the ladies that I taught with who stopped teaching, is a little over 50% of them stopped because they got married. Now, it's not necessarily true for the guys, but that is what I remember from the co-teachers I've had. The second point is some people do not really have the interest or perhaps the aptitude, somebody has said. I think this is related to what Harry Wong says in The First Days of School. How many of you are familiar with Harry Wong's The First Days of School and the stages of teaching? What are the 4 stages of teaching? Anybody tell me? I know Jonathan Erb can. Anybody?
Survival is first.
Survival, okay.
Infancy.
What'd you say?
Infancy, survival, mastery, impact.
Okay. I think in his book he says fantasy is the first one. Fantasy. Okay. So, Miss Angela, when she came to school, she was in fantasy mode. It's going to be wonderful. I am going to change their life. They are going to love me. I will give lessons, and they will just beg me to please keep teaching. You know, give us another lesson. And they don't, generally. They don't beg you to go, to keep on with this history lesson. No, they don't. In fact, they're bored before you start. Okay. And that plunges you right into survival mode. And how long do teachers usually spend in survival mode if they survive?
Barely a year.
Barely a year? Okay, so after they hit survival mode and they can climb out in a year. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying they probably quit if they're in survival mode too long.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. It can be a lot longer though if you're determined to survive.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's good. Now, if you're not familiar with these 4 stages, they're just going to sound ridiculous to you, so we won't labor them too much. If you ever read the book, The First Days of School, it's very, very helpful if you are teaching. If you And survival is just, what do I need to do to make it through this day, through this week, through this year? And you're working to survive. But you know, that's not a nice place to be. It's, you don't feel good about yourself. You don't feel successful. And teachers who stay in that mode too long, like Derek said, they tend to just quit. This just isn't me. The third stage was mastery, where you, I'm getting this. This is making sense now. And then the fourth stage, the most wonderful stage, is impact, where you know it well enough that you start to make an impact on your students. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Harry Wong would say a lot of teachers stay in survival mode for 2 to 3 years. That's pretty normal. And so mastery is from there on. And I think impact, when does that happen? 8 to 10 years maybe? I sound like I'm being too strict and critical, but I kind of think that that's what they say. Okay. So if you are stuck in survival mode too long, it's just discouraging. You don't feel like you're making an impact. Okay, the third thing, and this third point, and this is a big, oh, there was a point on the second point. Some people do not make it past. They just barely hit survival mode, and they're just, and they just give up. That happens very often. I think my favorite story of that was a school that could not find a teacher. A school board member finally says, "What is the fuss about teaching school? It's not even hard. I mean, you don't even have to work hard. You just sit at the desk and children do all the work and do a little grading. And it's not even hard. Why? I'll teach school this year. And, oh, sure, I guess that'll be great. So he showed up at school for the first day of school, half day of school. And it was harder than he thought. He went home after the first day of school. He called the rest of the school board and says, "I'm not going back tomorrow. You have to find another teacher." And they cajoled him, and he said, "No, I am not going back tomorrow." And he did not. He didn't. So they had to find another teacher. Okay. The third point is just a big general point about why teachers quit. And it is simply lack of support from parents and board. So parental support, A there. Teaching is a really vulnerable position. And if the parents of your school do not support you, it is just really difficult to stay focused. It is really difficult to stay long term. You can stay for a short while, but for long term, it's just not sustainable. And teaching, we as teachers need to understand, we don't run the school, we are, teaching is a service. It's service work. We don't really love the idea of voluntary service. Like, it's nice if it's considered to be a valuable service. Not a voluntary service. Because it's not sustainable long term. And if a teacher's service is not valued by the parents, it will be disregarded by the student. And that is very discouraging in a classroom. This is demonstrated by many, many things that the parents do or don't do. One is their presence at school events. That is very encouraging. If the parents show up, we have a school event. Can be a minor event, and if all the parents show up for a minor event, that's good. That's a good sign of parents supporting your school. If PTA is something that's pretty much on the calendar, you're going to be there. If you're not going to be there, if you can let the teacher know that you're not going to be there, it's really nice. So much nicer than they just didn't show up tonight. Different times. Yeah, it's discouraging, I'll just say. I remember one event where there was a minor school event. My my class had decided, we had decided to have a relay race, right? So I had a decent-sized class, and we did some running in school for phys ed, and we decided to have a relay race. So I made teams, I timed them all in a long run, like a quarter-mile run. And so it was a pretty long relay race. I think they all had to run a quarter mile. And timed them all and tried to put them together and make it just as close as I could make it. And then we gave them like 2 months to practice and train. And they got all into it. The boys were handing out diets to everybody. And one of the boys was pretty sure that if you rub your legs with peppermint oil, that would really help. You could run faster. So he tried that, and whoa, that was pretty awful. But all that to say, I was really surprised. They had asked me, when are we going to do this? And so I told them, let's try to do it this day. Make sure you're all here. And I was so surprised that day when a whole bunch of the parents showed up for the relay race. I hadn't announced it. I hadn't asked them to come. They were just there. It's really a nice thing. Appreciated it. The students really appreciated it too. The second thing that I think that I've had from parents that's really, really wonderful is just words of encouragement. And it's also it's a bit discouraging to never receive it. I know of teachers, older teachers who taught a long time, and I guess we never hear anything, we must be doing all right. And it's just really nice to know if do you appreciate what's happening at school? If you have a problem, would you come and tell us? If you appreciate it, it's nice to know that too. It's really nice. The third one is something our school in Milton Freewater, I think, does exceptionally well, and that is gifts of food and coffee to the teachers.
Amen.
That's really wonderful. What's the good old saying? You can about behind every successful person, there's a significant amount of coffee. I think it's true of a lot of teachers. So things like that, we always appreciate it when we know, you took time out of your day to come. You gave us a gift that we like, right? And it's not just a knickknack that sits in the corner of the bookshelf until somebody breaks it. This is a great gift. Appreciate things like that. And the fourth one then is just labeled support at home. When we sense from the parents that they're supporting our work, and I'm thinking maybe of things that are really kind of annoying, like homework. When we send homework home and we understand that this is a priority when the children bring homework home, that it gets done. And as teachers, I'm not going to talk about how we shouldn't send homework home or all that stuff, all those things. I'm just saying, it's really nice when we send homework home and the parents support getting the homework done. It's a really wonderful thing. To all these positives, there's a negative. Do I have to say all the negative? Conrad says no. Okay. Positive stories are really wonderful, too, when we hear parents giving us support, or when we hear maybe a parent comes and tells us how their child came home and told this story of what happened in school or something we said in school, and they just appreciate how you enforce that thing. Negative stories happen too, and the positive stories are really wonderful. Negative stories seem like they almost hit us harder sometimes. It can be something really minor, something completely pointless and useless. I remember one time that I had made a point about a bit of trivia that I found interesting. And we were doing science, and it was, hey, did you know this? This interesting, trivial fact that I had read sometime. And they said, oh, that's interesting. Well, one of the students came back and said, you know, my dad said, you know what you said about that? That's just stupid. And he said, you only think that way because of where you grew up. And what? here it is. It's in the encyclopedia. Oh. I was annoyed by that. I was really annoyed by that. I was so annoyed that at the next PTA, the parents were there, came to PTA. I said, by the way, that little incident, you know. Well, they were kind of embarrassed and red-faced. It was not nice of me to do that. It did not help anything. But, you know, we do have to have a sense of humor as teachers. Long-term teachers, I find, develop a great sense of humor if they survive, in order to survive sometimes. I think it's probably true about school boards and everybody else. You can only survive if you have a great sense of humor. And you might as well, because you might as well laugh about them, right? Laugh about things. Okay, the school board support here. Anybody have any comments, questions, or redirect about what I've said? Something you liked or didn't? Yes?
Back to your second point about the survival mode and so on.
Sure.
John Milton Gregory in The Seven Laws of Teaching talks about skill-based enthusiasm. And we develop that with any job. Anyone who starts a new job, once you know how to do that job, and you know that you can do a good job, whether it's building a house, baking a cake, or teaching school, that actually is additional motivation to the person to keep doing that thing because you enjoy doing it and you know you can do it. And unfortunately, I believe that kicks in most teachers until probably that 5 to 10 year tenure.
Yeah.
That we begin to feel comfortable that we can make this happen with the Lord's help and we start to truly enjoy what's happening.
Sure. Correct. That happens too. Yes, I hope you heard what he said. He's talking about skill-based enthusiasm, saying it doesn't often kick in until fifth or sixth year. I would say that's about right. That's about what it was. Yeah, excellent point. Okay, the school board support is really important. I've been talking about parent support here in case you missed it. I have been very fortunate to have good school boards. Of course, I have to say that because, you know, my school board's here. No, that is actually true. I hear stories about awful school boards, and that hasn't been my experience. I've had good school board. But I have talked to lots of people who don't have that experience. And there's two types of school boards that I think teachers find really difficult. And that's overgeneralizing, but let's just say two types. One is the school board that wants to micromanage your classroom. Okay, they want to be in control of your stuff and make your rules for you and things like that. The other one is the disengaged school board where, you know, they show up at the launch meeting maybe and then they're there at Christmas to ask you, would you consider teaching again? Or maybe they not there till March. Yeah, if you're a solitary person and you just don't want any interaction, why? Maybe you enjoy that. But most of the time, teachers really want the support of the school board. They just do. Just forget the most of the time. They do want it. I would ask you, too, what is the main job of a school board or a school administrator?
Teacher support.
Teacher support.
Finding good teachers.
Okay.
Teacher development.
My board has done an excellent job of that. Okay, you are a well-developed teacher now, right?
What I'm saying is that's due to school board members who are willing to come to me and say, hey, you know what, you can do better. Right?
Yeah.
And just be willing to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I wasn't trying to embarrass you, but I didn't think I could anyway, so yeah, that's a very good point. Those are really excellent answers. I actually expected somebody to say our children, and that is true too, but only in the abstract, actually, because, okay, yes, that is why I drew something on the board. This structure for school, I think we're probably all sort of familiar with this one, where we'd have the church here, you could say the ministry church, and here we have the school board. And here we have the parents, and here we have teachers. And you could switch these two around. Some people do in their school. And I'm not going to quibble about that necessarily. But I've always had this kind of in mind that the school board serves the church, and the parents are subject to the school board, and the teachers serve the parents and the school board and the church. So therefore, I was thinking about this. When you're thinking about the team concept, and I thought of this analogy, plus it was just an opportunity to come up and scribble on the board here. But this is a three-legged stool. And I think as we think about our child's education, we're going to call this the seat of education there, you know, where you sit down. That's where you get your milk the cow, whatever you're doing. That's where the work gets done, right there. And then each of these legs as a support, and we've got the school board here, and the teacher here, and the parents here, and they're all in the church, or maybe they're not. And how every one of those is very important, okay? And they all need to be, you know, the same, they need to be on the same page. And I know that teachers sometimes think that, you know, their support is, you know, half of it, but it's not really true. And I also think that these little connecting things here, that's our relationships with each other. The relationship with the board to the teacher to the parent. And that's what holds that support together. So, I really think that when you have all those things in place, teachers tend to stay. If we have good support, the board is working together, there's good support, it just tends to happen. Okay, keep going here. One of the things that I forgot to put in, so I just wrote it in here, so I'm going to say it right now, is the lady teachers in our midst that have taught for a long time, that have a lot of experience, I do feel like they are not respected as they should be sometimes. And we should maybe talk about that some. In this scenario that I presented here where Miss Angela, you know, in some places Miss Angela is teaching her third year, Mr. Martin is teaching his first year, he gets paid two or three times what she does because he's a guy. I don't think that's right. Okay, the next point is the financial support. And this is what has caused a lot of good teachers to leave teaching. And of course you knew I would get here eventually. And we all know this. I want to say, too, here that I'm not complaining because I believe my school has done very well at paying us. But there are many teachers that are barely getting by, and especially ladies. Some of our Anabaptist lady teachers with experience are getting around $5 an hour. And if you think that's all they're worth, I am disappointed in you. And what makes it more difficult to understand or accept, I guess, is that sometimes there can be a scenario where the school board says, you know, we'd like to raise your pay, and we just can't, we can't. But one of the school board will hire them as a secretary for twice the pay. What does that say about our values, about our priorities? What does it say? I know I'm saying this from a teacher's perspective. Okay, I do really believe that teaching is service work, and the question is how much we value this service. I know many teachers who would be willing to teach for very little pay because they love teaching. It's really where they come alive. But that's not really sustainable. One thing that makes a difference, too, is the living standard of the community. If we're teaching in a small, young community where people are struggling, I have not heard teachers, I know that teachers really need to understand that, and I think, for the most part, they do understand it. But if we're talking about an established community, where quite a few families are maybe buying their third farm, the expectations are a little different. It's not necessarily the amount of money that's made, too, but how the money is spent. If your peers are taking expensive vacations and buying expensive hunting gear and $5,000 drones and $7,000 pellet grills and 6,000 square foot houses, and there's a bit of discontent when there's not enough money in the school account to pay the teachers, and we have to make a plaintive announcement about and take a special offering so we can pay the teachers. I think it says something about our values. Enlarge to show texture there just a little bit. So would you as a school board be willing to work and live in your community for what you pay your teachers? I remember someone asking this at a school meeting one time. And there was several school board members sitting ahead of me. And they looked at each other and laughed and laughed and laughed and shook the benches. And at some point, I was like, you know, it's not that funny. It really didn't seem it was quite that funny. I did kind of know them a little bit. Another thing that relates a little bit, and I'm talking as a married man, probably, here speaking. I am a married man. I'm talking about how this affects men in my situation. The visibility of your financial situation. It's humbling to have the whole church know how much money you make. You ever think about that? I remember one student whose goal it was to just take the teacher down whenever he got a chance. And he asked me if I made a lot of money because my dad says you make bukus of money. So I'm like, I don't know, maybe. How much is a buku? And yeah, kind of interesting. Is it important that you tell your children how much the teacher is making? It might be interesting for all of you men if you're self-employed, to have three rather random people in your community sit down and decide how much you're worth. Three of your peers, how much you're worth every year. How does it feel? I am not complaining. I'm saying this is what it feels like sometimes. I guess I'm kind of complaining, but I'm not really intending to. It's just kind of my perspective. It does go beyond salary. I've been annoyed by reports of teachers who try to get, now it's not been in our school, this is not personal experience, but teachers trying to get reimbursed for things they bought for school, and the treasurer gives them a hard time and says, why did you have to buy that, and I'm not going to pay you all of it, or things like that. I know of this happening at a school, and if you have lady teachers and you have a man who's a treasurer, and a little bit of that really goes a long way. And in one case, they just were fine. We're not going to turn any receipts in. And the next year, there was an enormous turnover in, they needed a bunch of new teachers the next year. Things like that are unfortunate. Somebody has said that the low wages weed out those who are just in it for the money. Now, that is true. They also weed out those who are just can't survive, too. So, any comments on this particular issue? Redirect. When is this supposed to be done? Five minutes?
1:45.
Oh, I thought it was 2:00. Okay. Oh. Okay.
It's not all money. Our church has done an excellent job of showing our family that they appreciate us in things that were beyond money, whether it was donating a cab, helping us purchase a new property, and just a whole lot more than the check.
Yeah.
That means tremendous amounts to our family.
Mm-hmm.
Not just me.
Yeah.
On the matter of money, we know we've had a lot of inflation recently, and some of that inflation is about the things that teachers buy, like gasoline, right? I really think that our teachers are more subject to higher inflation than what is in the newspapers. So I'm suggesting that if you haven't given your teachers inflation-based wages in the last 3 years, maybe it's not considered. You limited their buying power when you decided to, whatever that wage was 3 years ago.
Yeah, inflation is a major thing. Good point. Feel free to have more comments. I want to make another point here. Well, maybe I should just wait. Yes?
I was going to say one other thing, and that is that we've had a long run of prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
Has it made a difference in our future wages? I'm not sure that we see that calibration through.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I think is very important, when you're looking at a monthly salary, it's a little bit hard to calculate, is this a good wage? But I think we should know how much time our teachers spend on school-related stuff and figure out what are they making per hour. Mm-hmm. Because that's something we can relate with. We can know this is how much this person makes per hour or whatever. And you realize, wow, they're only making $5 an hour or $10 an hour. It looks sounds a lot worse than, you know, $1,500 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, another point. here that I want to get in is emotional support. And this one I was a little squeamish to write down. How do you emotionally support your teachers? But I do feel it's relevant. I think that most teachers who stick it out past 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, they tend to be fairly passionate about school. And I think that's really a good thing. That doesn't mean they're loud and gregarious always. Sometimes they're quiet, but they care. They're passionate about it. What's wrong with that? Passionate people tend to be susceptible to criticism, more susceptible to criticism when they care about something. You think about somebody who makes a criticism of somebody you care about. Well, go all the way back to third, fifth grade when one of your friends talked negatively about your chosen truck, the one you had set your heart on. Or maybe it was eighth grade. And you could get pretty passionate about that because you cared for the fact that Fords were better than Chevys, even if it really didn't matter. That's maybe a bad analogy. But when we care about something, when we're passionate about something, we're easily hurt. How does that help you? I'm not exactly sure, except that if you have correction for a teacher, if you can remember that they probably care about this. And as teachers, I'm not talking to teachers, I guess, so I'm just saying how teachers tend to feel about this. There, I have thought about the grace tank analogy. We have a tank of grace, and maybe we think about the school board puts in grace and the teacher puts in grace, and we need grace. And we both take out of that as well. We need grace from the school board, and sometimes the school board needs grace from the teachers. And if we're both putting in, the tank does not get dry, even if somebody takes too much. Does that make any sense? Right? But if one of us stops putting in, if we stop giving grace, as teachers, we stop giving grace to the school board, and the school board never listens, and the tank runs dry. And a lot of teachers quit because of that. The tank is just run dry. They don't feel support. They don't feel like they can do anything right. And okay, I didn't even get to the millennial matters, where how most of our teachers, most of our new teachers, are now millennials, and all the problems and things that that's causing. Well, I don't know that it is as terrible as people say it is. But it is kind of interesting. Simon Sinek says that this generation has been called entitled, unfocused, lazy, self-interested, narcissistic. The people are confounding employers because they are hard to manage. So people in management have been asking millennials, what do you want? And millennials say something like, we want to work in a place that has purpose, and we want to have an impact, and we want free food and bean bags. And so that we write up a purpose statement, and there's free food and coffee, and they're still not happy. His point is that these people have grown up being told that they're special, and they can have anything they want, and they got participation medals that made them feel worse, and all that. I'm hoping that our situation is not that dire. I don't believe that it is, but we don't live in a vacuum. And our children can definitely grow up entitled. We have lived in a prosperous time. And we should understand our children are the result of our schools and teaching at home. And what are we teaching as far as raising entitled children? Okay. Anybody have another question or a redirect? Am I supposed to have a bell? I'm just done. Okay, thank you for your attention.